Welcome back to the LSCC podcast. The annual youth rummage sale is coming up on May 25th. If you have items that you'd like to donate, we'll be accepting donations the week of May 19th. You can get more information at lscc.tv. The Care Clinic's annual Life Walk is coming up on Saturday, June 1st. Don't miss out on a fun opportunity to support an incredible organization. You can get more details for the event at careclinicmqt.org. And now we'll join Justin as he digs into the Book of James.
So I feel a little pressure this morning. I feel a little extra pressure this morning because my parents are here. Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting they came all the way from Indiana where there hasn't been sunshine for 2 weeks, I'm just saying. It's a little nicer up here, I guess. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because they are here. I feel a little extra pressure. I'm a little more nervous than usual. And I was talking with Jeff, who was on the keys this morning, and he said, you know, maybe you should open with a joke. It's like, that's a good idea. So I started thinking of all these jokes my dad has told me over the years. I'm going, I can't say any of this from stage. Goodness gracious. I am excited, though, to be up here with you. I'm excited to give my first message live in front of my parents. This is pretty exciting. But it's not an easy one. I feel like I keep saying that with you guys every time I'm up here. This isn't going to be an easy message. And I'm starting to think that maybe the rest of the staff has something out for me. But in reality, James is not an easy book. This is going to be challenging. It's going to be a little uncomfortable at times. It can be painful. But it's truth, and it's set there not for you to feel worse about yourself or about the situations in your life, but to recognize and grow. And that's what we're going to get into this morning. And now you might be right about this moment thinking, oh my goodness, where are we going? Trials and temptation. Trials are things we've all been through, we've all faced. Some of us have faced more difficult trials than others. But we've all experienced a trial in our life. So let's walk through James this morning. We're going to be in chapter 1, verse 2. And we'll move forward from there. Let's begin. James 1, verse 2 through 4 says this, "Dear brothers and sisters, when trials of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow. For when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing." When I first read this, I started pondering in my mind, what kind of trials are we really talking about here? Like, the simple ones, the ones that are easy, like, oh, my car broke down. Darn. Got to get that taken care of. I mean, surely James, because he's telling us to have joy in situations, surely he's not talking about failing marriages or health issues. Or maybe a child who is running hard away from God and you're on your knees hour after hour praying for their return. Surely this isn't what James is talking about. He makes it pretty clear in that first verse. He says, take any category you can think of, any trial, anything, and it fits. Those are the trials we're supposed to find joy in. How? How can you find joy in those situations? Well, here's something that I think helps us understand. Think to school. Think back when you were a kid. You were in elementary, maybe middle school, high school, maybe college even, and you experienced some struggles. I can recall geometry class. See, math was never super difficult for me until I hit geometry. For some reason, it didn't click. I couldn't get it. And I'm sure my parents can remember, oh, some wonderful evenings of trying to do homework and teach me. Now, I can't imagine what my dad was going through. He's a mechanical engineer and uses math nonstop. He's like, all right, man, it's a circle, and you got to find the area. And it's a simple equation. Just do it. No, I don't get it. This makes no sense to me. But I do remember fights and arguments and tears. We all go into something not knowing. You, at one point in your life, didn't know 2 + 2. Now we think, well, that's silly. It's 5. Come on. Anyone knows that. You didn't know how to read. You didn't know how to write. Some of these things were trivial, and they were pretty easy to catch on, but then you got into more difficult things in life, and it got more challenging, and maybe it got more frustrating, but still you came through, and you learned. And that's what James is getting at here as we're working through this. It's not a situation where you should run away. It's something that you need to grab a hold of and grow. Find joy, because God can use these trials in your life to instill growth in you. Let's move on here. James 1, 5 through 8 says, if you need wisdom, ask our generous God, and he will give it to you. He will not rebuke you for asking, but when you ask him, be sure that your faith is in God alone. Do not waver. For a person with divided loyalty is as unsettled as a wave of the sea that is blown and tossed by the wind. Let's go back to this. If you need wisdom, ask our generous God, and he will give it to you. There have been many times in my life where I've faced something difficult. And I've tried to handle it on my own. I got this. And it tends to drive you into more trials. Let's be honest, when we're hurting, we don't tend to react rationally. We tend to react emotionally. And we need God to guide us. We need him to show us the correct path, how to take this, how to move forward, how to seek after him. He will not rebuke you for asking, but when you ask him, be sure that your faith is in God alone. Do not waver. A person with divided loyalty is unsettled as a wave of the sea that is blown and tossed by the wind. I know we went through that twice just now, but I needed you to hear it a second time. I myself have been in this situation. I've struggled where I've come to God and I've asked him for something, not believing he would give it to me. God, please help me understand this. I know you won't. I know it's not going to happen. My son, he tends to ask mom for everything first. And his response is, when we ask him, why don't you ever ask your dad? He says, because dad will say no. If we're going to approach God with that mindset, with that attitude, what's God going to say? No. We have to come to him expecting him to help. And I understand. Hear me out. If you're in a moment of trial right now, if you're going through a valley in your life, I get how difficult it is because you're wrestling with so many things. You're wrestling with doubt, with uncertainty. You don't know where you're headed, or if you don't even feel like you're ever going to come out of this place. To come to God and ask God for wisdom and guidance, I don't even feel like he's here now. But let's take a step back, and I want to talk to you about something. The last time I was up here, we were diving into Mark, and we were studying Mark. And one of the passages in Mark chapter 9, it was verse 20 through 24, it set us up for how to approach God even in doubt. And what's happening is there's a father, and his son is possessed by a spirit that's trying to kill him. And the father hears that Jesus is nearby, so he takes his son and he seeks after Jesus. He shows up to where Jesus and the disciples are supposed to be, and only a few of the disciples are there because Jesus and James, John, and Peter are up on a mountaintop, and Jesus' glory is being revealed in this moment. So the father gets there and he's a little upset, he's a little disheartened because Jesus isn't present. So he turns to the disciples and he asks them to please heal his son. Now Jesus has given the disciples previous to this the authority to go out to cast out demons and heal. So the disciples can do this, but they fail. See, they're struggling with their own doubt. They're struggling with their own faith, and it transfers into the Father who brings his son to be healed. And when Jesus finally shows up, he asks what's going on, and the Father says, I've brought my son to you to be healed. Please help us if you can. Jesus looks at the man and says, what do you mean, if I can? Do you not know that anything is possible if you believe? And the way the man responds, the way the father in the story responds to Jesus is exactly how we should respond when we're struggling with our unbelief. He says, I do believe, but help me overcome my unbelief. And with James telling us to seek wisdom and not be divided, what he's saying is not, you have to be perfect, you've got to have all the faith in the world. No, he's saying, approach Jesus, approach God, ask for wisdom. And if you're doubting, if you're struggling, if you're hurting, ask him to overcome that. Continue to keep your eyes focused on God. Do not approach him with a heart that doesn't expect him to show up. How many times have you asked for prayer that way? How many times have you allowed the darkness in this world to win because it twists your mind to believe that God isn't for you? So when you approach him, you don't expect him to be there. James is telling us, pay attention, focus. This leads me to my first point. And what I want you to hear is that we have choices to make when it comes to how God impacts our lives. And in trials, we can allow God to come in and move in our lives. And if we do, then God will use our trials to create perfection in us. He wants to lead you to perfection, and he recognizes there is some pretty nasty stuff that we have to face. The question for you is, will you let him use those situations to pull you closer to him? Or will you allow those situations to keep him further away? The next passage that we come to, the next few verses that we're going to talk about, they were a little confusing when I first read them. I got to be honest with you. I didn't understand what James was getting at. It didn't make sense to me. So I had to do some research and I had to do some digging. So as I read this, I want you to, if you're reading it going, what are we talking about here? I want you to know that we'll explain it in a moment. But this is what it says, James 1, 9 through 11. It says, believers who are poor have something to boast about, for God has honored them. And those who are rich should boast that God has humbled them. They will fade away like a little flower in the field. The hot sun rises and the grass withers. The little flower droops and falls, and its beauty fades away. In the same way, the rich will fade away with all of their achievements. When I first read that, I was like, wow, James is being pretty harsh on wealthy people. But rightly so, because you got to understand, in this time period, there wasn't really a lot of middle class. You were wealthy or had nothing. And there was this huge rift between these people, between these two classes. It's not really that uncommon for us today. It's easy when you're in a poor state to look at the wealthy and say it's not fair. But it's also when you're in the wealthy sense to be proud. And what James is doing is he's leveling the playing field here. He's reminding them that your stature has nothing to do with how God sees you. It doesn't matter if you have all the wealth you could possibly gain or if you have not even enough to feed your family. God loves you the same. And what he's telling us is that if you're in that high stature, to not let that make you feel as though you are worth more to God. And if you're in the poor situation in life, to not feel as though you're less. So he's kind of doing this. But that's not just what he's saying. This is reading a little between the lines. And this is some work, but this is what I also believe James is saying here. I firmly believe that James is calling us to caution. Because it's very easy when you're in a low point in your life to look at others who are in a high point and find jealousy and find hatred and anger and frustration because it's not fair that they get it all and I have to deal with this. We tend to believe that if you have it all, if it looks like things are going great, then you never have an issue. But that's not true. That's what James is reminding us. We all will face trials, regardless of who we are, what income status we have, what job we have. We will all face difficulties. Everyone gets mountaintop experiences, and everyone gets valley experiences. Just because you're in a valley and someone else is on a mountaintop does not mean that's the way life goes. Because the person on the mountaintop has a valley ahead or just behind. And the one in the valley has a mountaintop ahead and just behind. One of the struggles that we face right now as a nation, as a society, is social media. And I know this is going to sound like an attack on social media, and it absolutely is. But let's get real. When we post on social media, it's all mountaintop. And if you're in a valley and you're scrolling through, and everybody's life is perfect, and everything's going wonderful, and they have the best kids in the world, and they just got back, well, actually, it looks like they go on vacation every 2 weeks. It begins to eat at you, though. It begins to cause dissension. Because let's get real, right? Nobody gets on social media, is posting, and is like, just had a fight with the spouse. Not sure we're going to make it. Hashtag marriage stinks. No, we don't. We don't. It always appears that our life is perfect. But I want you to hear this. If your life always appears perfect to those around you, how can you minister to someone who's hurting? We're to walk this life together, right? Why would we want to divide from each other? So maybe let's be real with one another. I'm not telling you, go and post all your trash on Facebook, right? But I am saying, maybe talking face to face. Maybe when you hear someone's having a hard time, you walk up and you say, "Oh, I was just there. I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to pray over you." And if you need someone to walk beside you when it feels like you can't stand, I've got you. Unite. But the one thing we cannot do, we cannot let dissension into our lives and cause sin to rise up. And James is challenging us to realize that we're all in this together, regardless of who we are or what we do. Because where sin is, death will come. Brings us to my second point. The second thing I want us to hear this morning, the second thing that you need to make a choice on, and it's whether or not you allow God to use trials to expose and remove sin. Will you allow him to use the situations where you're just beginning to fester and boil in anger, and will you be humble enough to let him call you out and say, "You can be better"? When we walk through those valleys, we tend to find dirt. So let's let God clean us up. Let him pull us forward closer to him. The last passage I have for you this morning, it's the end of James 2, or 1, verses 2 through 18 that we're talking about. And it's 12 through 18. Goes a little bit quick, but this is where James shifts from trials into temptation. And this is what he says. "God blesses those who patiently endure testing and temptation. Afterward, they will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. And remember, when you are being tempted, do not say, 'God is tempting me.' God is never tempted to do wrong, and he never tempts anyone else. Temptation comes from our own desires, which entice us and drag us away. These desires give birth to sinful actions, and when sin is allowed to grow, it gives birth to death. So do not be misled, my dear brothers and sisters. Whatever is good and perfect is a gift coming down to us from God our Father, who created all the lights in heaven. He never changes or casts a shifting shadow. He chose to give birth to us by giving us his true word, and we, out of all creation, became his prized possession." Facing temptation is difficult. It's frustrating. And oftentimes we like to blame God. And you know, I had a thought that I actually took out of my message. And I don't think I'm going to be allowed to. The question that I so often hear and that I've wrestled with myself is, why would God allow this to happen? Maybe you've been there. And I want to be so bold as to address this because I don't feel like pastors do very often. He didn't allow this to happen. Whatever you're going through, God didn't will it to happen. He walks with you. You might be thinking, well, how do you know he didn't allow it to happen? Well, let's go back to the beginning. God created, and it was good. God didn't say, this is okay. He didn't say, this is good, but I need to work some kinks out. God said, this is good. In the beginning, God created everything in perfection. Adam and Eve didn't have to face trials, but they chose to pluck the apple or undescribed fruit from the Old Testament. They chose to pluck that and eat of it. They chose death over perfection. And I get it. You might be thinking, well, I wouldn't have done that. Why should I be punished for something they chose? And you're right. You wouldn't have done that. You now know the cost. You now know the outcome. You now know what it takes. You know the pain. You know the hurt. Sure, you wouldn't have done it. But remove all that. Place yourself in the shoes of Adam and Eve. As a serpent comes up to you and says, you won't really die. God knows you'll be like him. Would you really turn it down? If that wasn't enough, God then gives us thousands of years of examples in what we call the Old Testament of how we can't get it right. Over and over and over and over. You guys want to know how many rules we have to follow? 10. And we fail over and over and over. God gives Moses the 10 commandments. Live this way and you'll be fine. And we can't even do that. So he sends Jesus to restore. And you know what Jesus faces? Trials. Temptation. Proof that he's willing to walk with you through the choices you have made. But we can't blame him. We can't blame him. All that will do is divide us. All that will do is cause separation from us and the one who wants to restore us to perfection that he originally intended. You say you wouldn't have chose the apple, but you're already running from God. He never changes or casts a shifting shadow. He chose to give birth to us by giving us his true word. By the way, that's Jesus. And we, out of all creation, became his prized possession. He chose you as his prized possession. And I don't care where you're at in your life. You can look at me right now and go, but you don't understand what I've done or what I've been through. That doesn't matter to God. You are his. He gave his life for you already, and he would do it again. The last point, the last thing that we have to choose, the last point that I want to bring to you this morning is this. God uses trials to help you defeat temptations. He does. If you let him, he will use the trials in your life that you're facing to help you realize and recognize temptation so that you can turn your back to it when it comes. You've got to allow God to move, though. You've got to be willing to listen to him, even when he says something that feels so painful. The series that we're talking about, James, it's not going to be comfortable. It's not comfortable up here either. I got to wrestle with it for weeks. Next week, you and I, we're going to be talking about taming the tongue. That's something I know we can all say we wrestle with. It's going to be difficult. We're going to face trials. We're going to face temptation. We've got to let God move in us. We've got to turn our eyes to Jesus to help us get through, because he took the cross for you. But he didn't just take the cross. He took the beatings. He took the persecution. He took the spit in his face for you.
Thanks again for joining us. And don't forget to stay up to date with the latest information at lscc.tv. We'll see you next week.